So, in your view, how has the technology changed over the last decade in terms of MMCs?
And I think we're going to see more and more companies following the successes that are out there at the moment. And what we do is obviously a lot of MMC house building now is taken off site. And where I see the advances being made are in what we call.
Where is the construction industry not focused and should be?
So it's how do we improve experience and how do we churn into production formats? And by doing so, how can we pay people better and improve their life in construction?
How do you stay creative in your work?
How do I stay creative? Challenges, people will ask me. So last year I finished for me. We built different versions of it, and that was quite creative, and I quite enjoyed doing that.
How do you build houses that pay for themselves? In a world where the shortage of affordable housing is a global issue, innovative minds are seeking solutions to transform the construction industry. By combining decades of experience with cutting-edge technologies, a new era of cost-effective and sustainable housing is on the horizon. You're listening to Bricks and Bytes, and on this episode, we welcome Paul Richards, founder of GUR Build Net Zero Energy Housing and technical designer. In this episode, we explore how sub-assemblies inspired by the automotive industry can slash construction costs by a staggering 30%. We'll also uncover the surprising reason why engaging more women in construction could be a game changer for the industry. Paul will also introduce us to a little-known building standard that can make your energy bills virtually disappear. And finally, we'll delve into the single most overlooked factor that can make or break your construction business in the next decade. If you're enjoying our podcast, you can support us by heading over to www.bricksbytes.show and signing up to our newsletter. This is an easy and free way which helps us keep the podcast going. In addition, you'll receive all of the key insights from the guests we have on, as well as some bonus content about what's going on in the wider world of construction tech. And now, an announcement from our sponsor, Shift. BIM often feels overwhelming for contractors. That's why this episode is brought to you by Shift. They'll help you tackle all your digital needs from 3D BIM modeling to BIM strategy and beyond. Visit maketheshft.digital for more.
Okay, Paul, so you have founded GUR Build Net Zero Energy Housing. You are a technical designer, PDFMA manufacturer. You have designed and built over 1,000 glass buildings. So I would like you to talk us through your journey with construction and why you ended up founding GUR Build.
So I've got a 40-odd year construction background, started as a kid. And really why I funded GURBA is I could see that finally the UK was starting to look at alternatives to traditional construction. I've got a commercial, luckily I started out in commercial construction when I started getting serious. I was 19 and I got involved in commercial construction up and down the country. And I just couldn't believe back then why we weren't adopting those sort of techniques in the housing sector. And about 2010, I got involved in the Retrofit for the Future program. I could see then that how we were looking to retrofit houses back then, the solutions really would be first tried in the new build. So about 2017, I got involved in a program down in Cornwall where we were looking to find ways of producing affordable to passive house standards, really. How can we build houses affordably? And I went to Cornwall looking to see if I could encourage local developers to look at alternative ways of building housing, really. But again, with a lot of MMC, it's still very, very early for a lot of people. And some people, though, I've been sort of pushing MMC.
Right. So the last 10 years really has been a period of people trying for themselves, their own. And what you usually find is most developers have their sort of preferred way of building houses. And what they're trying to do, what a lot of them have tried to do, is industrialize an old technology, which I don't think works. And you've seen a lot of that. And what's coming out of it now is you are starting to see some successes. And those successes really have a common theme running through them. And I think we're going to see more and more companies following the successes that are out there at the moment. And what we do is obviously a lot of MMC house building now is taken off site. And where I see the advances being made are in what we call sub-assemblies. Now, sub-assemblies are where we take a raw material and we cut them to length, we drill holes in them, or we attach services to them, and that becomes a part. Now, that becomes known as a sub-assembly. Now, those sub-assemblies are, if we looked at the car industry and we looked at that as an example, a sub-assembly could be an alternator. Now, that isn't made in the factory. That is assembled in the car. That could be made anywhere in the world. And it's brought to a place and then assembled in its final destination. And I think that's where... I think that's where businesses are focusing now. Instead of having these humongous mega factories and that huge fixed overhead, I think you're going to see that there's going to be more flexibility in those factories and where they're going to adopt sub assemblies. A lot of that, what you're seeing now is companies that have proven products. So they're trying to entice the supply chain to make those products for them. And I think that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. So it's not really like making up new technologies. It's really like optimizing the delivery of the product, which is creating smaller parts and then delivering it to the site for the installation on site. So not like having everything manufactured off site and then transferred to the site and just to install, put in place. Yeah, because this model does not seem to work. As we had, I think in the UK we had two large manufacturers go bust in 2023. And what I read about that is that the reason for that was that it was just two big factories, and they didn't manage to go through the down market, I believe.
Well, there's categories of MMC, and that's something. And I'll just talk about the three main categories as I see them. There's volumetric, which is what you just described, is where you see a whole house being made in a factory, and then you see half of the house going up down the motorway, and then being assembled, you know, and then being arriving in its final destination. That's volumetric. Mm-hmm. Then there's panelized, where you see sections of a house being manufactured in a factory, and those sections go where you see SIPS panels for windows and doors and maybe already a brick front on them, and they go to site and they get assembled on site. That's a little bit more flexible. Mm-hmm. Now, what our government's champion is what's called a platform approach, which is a kit of parts approach. And what we believe is schools, hospitals, I was part of the schools and hospitals program at the Construction Innovation Hub. And what we believe is that those kit of parts have a common DNA. Now, what I believe is that is the proven processes and products that build schools and hospitals can come down, and techniques come down to house building. And if we train, I mean, I started in house building, and most of my age, people in my age, I'm getting on a bit now, but most people my age, they went on site and they started learning ways about construction through house building, and then went on to evolve and build schools and hospitals as I did. But for me, it was, I knew that the last piece missing was to advance house building sector. So that's really where I wanted to focus. And when our government said, yeah, we're going to look at MMC as the term arrived, that was it for me. I could see that it paid to all my strengths. I've owned factories. I've worked with architects all my life. I've been designing and manufacturing components to build with. And I knew that I could tap into those experiences and bring that to the housing sector. And that's really key to this. It's about engaging all of the supply chain and bringing them on the journey with us, because there's a huge opportunity if we get it right.
Mm-hmm. So this is like a financial opportunity to the industry to improve the homes as well, because is it like the way of to manufacture like cheaply like products which are very similar to the current products that are on the market, houses which are more traditional, or are these houses more maybe thermally efficient or better?
So you've hit on the head there, really, because my belief is we've got an opportunity to make them super thermal. The ultimate is passive standard. So I believe we've got the opportunity at the moment to use these technologies and these new products to really bolster the way we deliver houses. Now, a couple of things. We've got, everybody knows there's a shortfall of housing, so it's how can we really tap into that. And this isn't just a UK issue. This is a global issue. I talk to people like yourself all around the world, and they've got exactly the same problem as we have about delivering affordable housing. And that's really where I focus. We can build luxury. That's not an issue. How can we use those products down in the affordable market and build Goldsmith Street, really, which is the first social housing built to passive standard, and that was by Norwich Council. And I have to say, that is really where people, we can learn an awful lot from Goldsmith Street and the teams that were around and built that. And what I want to do is take those known successes and replicate that on a scale for everybody to understand. And that's key to this. It's right, people like myself and others in the professional services being really clever, but it's about how do we get everybody else on the same page and we get them to try these products. That's key to this. And we've got to make it understandable from the guys on site. And I think that you talked about, you know, what changes have been made in MMC, really. The changes professional side are done. It's how do we bring the guys on site up to speed, and how can we encourage them to adopt modern ways of thinking, really? And it is, you know, you think about the skill sets and the materials that some of the architects can design with, but it's about how do we bring the guys on site with us, and that's key, because they don't want change, and you can't blame them. You know, if you look at your brickies on site today, you know, okay, they're struggling a bit at the moment, but normally they're earning really good money. They go to site with a bucket of tools, with a new knot in their streamline, you know, a beat to death spirit level with a bubble that probably you haven't seen for a couple of years. Hmm. And it's how can we bring them, encourage those guys to think differently? So we've got an issue with new people coming into construction. And I think that's an area where we really need to transform the construction to engage the new entrants, really. How do we, it's okay for us. I've got about 10 years before I hang up my tools, but it's how do we encourage and make construction an attractive career for the young people coming through? The money's there. The money's there in construction if they're good, but it's how can we encourage normal people that have are practical, and you know, because not everybody's an academic. How do we encourage the practical teams to come on this journey with us and make it better for everybody?
People actually talk a lot about skill shortage and labor shortage. What is your idea about that, and how can this be solved within the UK?
Skill shortage. So it's about how do we excite the youngsters really to come into construction. I don't know about yourself. I fell into construction by default. I wasn't particularly bright when I was a kid. I was good at building stuff. Yeah, I could make stuff. I was good. I was dyslexic. Didn't know what that meant back there. Don't ask.
Same here.
Yeah. Are you? Really?
I was just curious how these tall buildings can stand, like, you know, 20, 30 stories. Yeah, like such a small sections of elements. How can they hold so much weight and so many stories? Yeah, and it's just
fabulous.
Yeah, that was it.
Same as you. I've got one of those. I'll look at something and I want to know how it's made, no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. I want to know how it's made. So I've got that sort of, I've got that way of breaking stuff down in. And I just know that how do we get it? Well, they've lost a lot of youngsters. It's not construction industry that's struggling. You know, we all talk about the generation that, you know, don't really want to work. They do want to work. It's just they're a bit smarter than what we were when we were younger. They don't want to work done. And I think that's key to this. I think the construction industry is not really using their full capabilities, and the kids know it. And I think that's where I need to address it. I think we need to excite them by showing, hang on a minute, if you're smart, look what you can achieve. Come on, I can start you off with the practical skills. Once you've got that combined with your ambition, you can go all the way if you're a grafter. And it's just showing them how to do it, really, and it's encouraging them. And what we lack in the UK, you touched on, you know, how we see it. I worked in Germany, and being a youngster in Germany, being an apprentice in Germany is an honor. Unfortunately, in domestic construction sites, like house building sites, the youngs aren't treated the way they should be. They should be really encouraged, because in a minute, we want those young ones to take over from us, you know, and we need to encourage them. I want to support the kids that want to learn. A lot of kids really don't want to learn. But the ones that do want to learn, I want to show them that I think it's a phenomenal opportunity to get into construction now with the way that the digital world is actually coming into house building. And there's the opportunity, really. You get it right, the money's there. And if you're really good and you're really smart, I don't think there's any old back globally because, like I said, there's a shortage of housing no matter where you are in the world. I talk with Australia, I talk with Canada, I talk with France, I talk with Germany. There's a shortage of houses everywhere. Mm. And affordable housing. We can all go in, you know, if we're earning a phenomenal wage, there's not a shortage. But for normal people to have a decent life in this country, those houses have to be structured in a way that people can go to work, have a life, and go out and spend. And that's been proven in Norwich. When I went up there, I was lucky to be shown around by the guys that built it and Andrew Turnbull, who was the brains behind Goldsmith Street.
And when was it done? Which year was it?
Oh, it won the Sterling Prize. What was that? I don't know how many years ago now, 2019, 18, 19, something like that.
Okay.
But you got to go up around there. And I have to say, it for me, it just replicated what German architecture is about. It's about the way that the Germans think about build into better tolerances using better materials. And we did that. And it is difficult for us to build that in the UK because the products, I like trying to use homegrown products. So manufactured in the UK, if there's an industry in the UK, I want to try and use their products, or I want to try and talk to them and encourage them to make new products. Now, it is a bit of a difficult thing because there isn't a clear message from our government saying what is definitely going to happen as regards to, are we going to go to zero carbon housing? You know, what are our triggers? When are we going to do it? What is our ultimate goal? But if we go, the ultimate for me is passive house standard. Mm-hmm. If we build passive house standard cost effectively, you use the word cheap, I say cost effectively, which we can. And all we've got to do is tap into known practices in other industries like the car industry, some of the products, some of the finishes they use. Phenomenal. If we bring that over into the house building sector, we're away and that's it. And there ain't no going back. With some of these young designers, this is what you talked about, bringing some of the young guys in. On the design team at the Hub with some youngsters from all around the world. Flipping it, they can design. Got a different mindset. You encourage them and they're holding back. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to excite the youngsters and say, go on in, design it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you're at an organization called MOBI. It's the Ministry of Building, Innovation, Education. And what they're trying to do is get the schools to start thinking more about practical skills and encouraging people to get into construction. That's really what they're trying to do. And that's headed by some smart people, some intelligent people that know what they're trying to do. And what we're doing is trying to get the kids to model stuff differently. And I've seen some of the models and I have to say they're better than I can do, which is quite good. So I like that. Mm-hmm. I like seeing some of the youngsters showing what can be done. I love it.
Brilliant. Okay, you touched on passive house standard. Can you explain what that is? And maybe I will also touch on the term that I've read on your website, which is called NZEP. Can you also explain what that is?
So passive house is a way of building is building physics more. To ask me to explain it off the cuff, I'd rather show you a video that explains it far better than I could. So basically, it's better insulation. It's better use of free energies. So using natural light to where you can. It's looking at the whole building envelope and building using technologies that work for you. I'm not explaining that very well. So it's better that I send you a video which explains it in simple terms.
We can attach it to the podcast as well.
I'll do it. There's somebody that explains it really, really simple. It's a couple of minutes long and they explain it far better than I do. But it's building houses that really use minimal energy to run. So the bills should be... It should be very minimal, and that's key to this. And we should be able to do that. Same as we look at efficiencies when we buy a car now, I think going forward, we're going to be looking at efficiencies when we buy a house. Mortgage companies are looking at how can we encourage people to be able to buy these houses, and how can we ensure that they it helped to repay their mortgages, and that's keeping the bills down. Bills have gone off. One, most houses in the UK really are old existing stock, and they're very difficult. And I think what you'll see, like they did with old cars, you'll see the fact that old houses will need to be retrofitted up to better standards. So my net zero energy. So what we do is we try to build an house which. There's a couple of things going on. People talk about what's embodied carbon in materials. Now, me as a builder, as a manufacturer, it's very difficult for me to calculate the need for manufacturers to make products because the market's not there. So I didn't say that very well either. So if I went to a steel manufacturer and said, look, I use a lot of steel, but steel's got a lot of embodied carbon in it, I want you to reduce it. They say, well, you show me the market for it and I'll invest in the art produce. So it swings and roundabouts, but it is coming. So what we do is we talk about operational zero carbon. So what we believe is when we build a house efficiently and it's done and finished, then that shouldn't contribute to any more carbon emissions. So that's operational. So that's really where we're looking at a term. When they're finished in its operation, that shouldn't contribute to carbon emissions. But at the moment, and what is good is because people are talking about carbon, embodied carbon. They are looking to reduce their embodied carbon in their manufacturing processes. What can't happen, and this is something that I'm quite frustrated about, is we can't stop house building because the materials aren't quite there yet. We still need to keep evolving the builds. So that's it. But I have been working with industry now for a few years, and we're developing products that are again help us build to really lower carbon emissions. Really,
okay. So maybe you can touch a little bit on the Gurbuild and what's on your product. What type of construction is Gurbuild? Is it timber, masonry, steel as a main superstructure? What kind of construction that is?
So it's a hybrid, really. What we did is I looked at I'm looking at future home standards. So future home standards are where houses are going to be 2030 onwards. So what I looked at, I took from the commercial world, what's the quickest way? We go through what's called define the need. We look at what is a house. I know this is going to start waffling a bit, but bear with me. What is a house? We need somewhere warm and dry and keep the weather out. So how do we keep the weather out? What do we need to keep the weather out? We need a roof. Okay, so what's the best way of putting a roof over a structure? And it's breaking down the steps. And a lot of people don't think like you probably do because you're dyslexic, but it's breaking down the steps. Yeah, I do. That's my problem. But it's breaking. What do we need? And we don't need a load of tiles on a roof held up by a load of roof trusses and just and not be able to use the biggest space of most houses and just fill it full of stick trusses, really. So it's how can we have a roof up there? How can we build a structure that is easy to understand, easy to build, and easy to expand? What I mean by that is, during our defining the needs, we do what is a starter home? What should a starter home? Where's the shortage in the marketplace? Mm-hmm. And if we look at two-bed starter rooms, okay, once you put that footprint down and you've built a two-bed starter room, most construction are limited to that house forever in its day only ever being a two-bed starter room. So we look at, okay, so what happens when you and your partner get in there, suddenly you're in the house, you haven't got mum and dad getting on at you, and suddenly there's a kid comes along, so you need that extra bedroom, then there may be another kid. But instead of trying to move and find a three-bed house, can that house already, is it prepped really to be a three bed house? And the answer is, yeah, it can. And we can use engineering, and that's really what the Gurbuild system is. It's a future proof as much as we could house. So it's a two bed start room, can be a four or five bed house. We can go in, the loft's already prepped, ready to be an extra two bedrooms. And we can bolt on extension. We can bolt on a porch. We can bolt on a kitchen extension. We can bolt on a garage extension. We can bolt on a loft extension. So it's like a car chassis. When you open your bonnet on your car, you'll see what are those holes for. And it's usually they've taken the premise of a standard chassis and it's used for multiple applications. And that's what we did with the house, really. So we come from an engineering mindset. If we're going to build a house, What's the quickest way to get out of the ground? And what helped us get out of the ground? And what we did, Gurubuild started to design a ground rig. And what that ground rig is how can we get out of ground quick? Because as you mm-hmm. probably know, most mistakes and most expense happens in the ground. Mm-hmm. So how can we use engineering and how can we use proven techniques to get us out of the ground? So we core drilled a ground. We set a ground rig into the ground, which is already, it's like your car chassis. That rig is already prepped, drilled, and just bolt stuff to it. It's as easy as that. And then we use different material. We use a light gauge steel as well. So we got a light gauge steel purlin. And we use an engineered timber hollow stud or mullion, whatever you want to call it, but it's hollow. And what that does is that allows us to inject a liquid insulation. It's brilliant. I mean, it was developed with Huntsman. But again, gets you to pass through. So everything we've done is how can we use technology to get to the ultimate of passive standards, really? And that's what we did. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, I started speaking with a company called Linear about fenestration. How can we now take a standard window product and make it to a passive? How can we make it to an ultimate U value? And obviously, you know, again, early days, nobody's really going. Our government weren't committing to a super thermal standard that everybody could follow and start developing their products to. But Linear listened to me and they developed the 090 system. And it's mm-hmm. the first UK manufactured housing system to passive standard, passive certified. And again, 250 fabricators across the UK now have access. When the market, when people start talking about retrofitting, if they retrofit into net zero or to operational zero carbon, they need the products. And that's what's been missing. So I'm out into industry and I'm talking, I've got the insulation, got the window. I'm talking to industry now about getting the ultimate front door. I'm after a, and this is about being cost effective as well. This isn't paying $2,000 for a front door. This is how can I get a front door now that is made in the UK by UK manufacturers, that we can all have a little bit of slice of the businesses there that is coming. And I'm talking to them at the moment about developing doors. And we're talking to the insulated glass manufacturers about developing the ultimate triple glazed unit. So how can we get a triple glazed unit cost effective, lightweight, to again to be the ultimate standards? And they're all falling in shape. They're some of these products are weeks and months away, and that's key mm-hmm. to this. They're not 2 or 3 years away anymore.
Brilliant. A few follow-up questions on that. So first one would be, so would you be building them within like localized factories close to the site or on-site or somewhere centralized and then delivered to the parts or panels to the site? And second one would be about structural warranties. Do you deal with, do you have to deal with them or there is some way around?
So I'll talk with the near on site. So we finished the housing system about 2017. So I obviously jumped on it because this probably has been in my head for about 40 years. How can we build houses using products that I used to work with? And that was it. So quite easily for me to pull the system together. So we did that. And then we started talking to NHBC about the warranties. We started talking about BOPAS. We started talking to mortgage companies about mortgageability of them. Now that has become a lot more easier to understand for the mortgage companies. What I did is I cheated. I thought I was part of the Construction Innovation Hub. So I had access to probably some of the best engineers in the world, really. And I have to say that. And what I managed to do is I chucked my system in front of them and I said, right, check it out and validate everything I'm saying. And that for me, to use the aircraft engineers, to use the guys doing the McLaren, the Formula One and the space, to have them working with them. Wow. And that's really what it is. And to get them excited about a house as well, how can we build a house, to get them excited as well, and to see that we can crack this was special for me. And I've been lucky to continue with the support as well, which has been fabulous.
If I can stop you for a second, when you spoke with engineers, like manufacturing, I don't know, aviation or cars, What thoughts they have on the construction, manufacturing construction? Because when I think about anything and any product as a vehicle or as an aircraft, it obviously the accuracy is much better of producing this product, and it's probably more streamlined. So what do people say, what engineers say about construction?
Okay, so this is it. I'm going to say most people listening to this are builders. How can I say it? Builders and engineers have this sort of a love-hate relationship, really. The aircraft guys speak in a language and the aerospace guys speak in a language that most builders don't understand. Architects struggle to listen to the aircraft engineers. But it's the process behind their choice of material and the reasoning for it. So they have what's called a QFD process. So if you want to design a car or an aircraft or a rocket ship, they go through a material drawdown selection. And what that is QFD, what that stands for is quality, function, and deployment, I think. What I class that as is the top trump of material. So if you've got, if somebody's saying, like somebody might say, oh, I want to build it out of timber, I want to build it out of concrete, I want to build it out of steel, all those products are validated to make it. What are you going to do with those materials? So you take it down through its drawdown selection. I want to do this with it. I want to reduce embodied carbon. This is what I want. And then suddenly your material choice comes down to an obvious way of choosing the reason why you chose that material. Reason I chose steel is because it gets the roof up really quick. I can get it manufactured anywhere is key to this. Mm-hmm. And steel prices fluctuate. But if we can offset that about the speed. So if I look at the price of steel and offset that with the speed of installation, there's wriggle room is probably the best way of saying it. And then steel's going to last forever, and it gives me the ability to bolt on future products too. So that's that. But what you talked about, the warranties, you have to go for it. You just can't design a system and say, yeah, it works. There are certain criteria you have to follow. But if you ever read the NHBC guide on materials, it's competent. It's down to competences as well. What we do is professionals is we use structural engineers to sign off their bit. We use, we use the architects. We use everybody to sign off to try and that traceability throughout the whole material and the build. So that's probably the way we go. It's what MMC's doing. Is BOPAS is one that a lot of people use, is build off site. I can't remember what that stands for, but that's that one. And if you're with the NHBC, then they will come and they will sign it off for you as well. But if you use engineers like I've used, then they don't, you have to try and say, listen, we can't afford to use that in houses because they don't worry about what the components are. This is what you should use. But it's for us to look at it and say, actually, ideally, yeah, but I can't build it out of something that exists on certain planets. I have to use it. I have to work with what I can get. So it's about understanding what you're trying to do with a design and then, maximizing the potential through your different modules. That's really what we do. And I didn't explain that very well either.
No, it's all good. Paul, what is your view on construction and MMC within construction? Well, MMC within construction, MMC in like 10 years time.
I think we've gone through, I'm going to say this, and this has put my neck on the line. I think we've gone through, we've still got a few little things to get out of the way. I think people jumped into MMC, like I said earlier, about having products that shouldn't really be classed as MMC. And I think what's happening now is we're starting to see successes and industry are building on those successes. And I think what's happening now, again, about with the sub-assemblies, instead of taking you're going to see more in a few years to come, you're going to see more of hybrid solutions. You're going to see more composites coming in to house building. You're going to see more paneled systems, complete paneled systems. You're going to see houses being simplified, but not being, and this is really what we're trying to do, and it's not having them all look the same. We still want to encourage the individuality of a house. We still want to encourage architects to use the local aesthetics and personalize them. But the products are definitely on the shelf now, whereas they weren't before. We've got some phenomenal brick systems, great render systems. And I think we're going to see a lot more spray finishes, a lot more pump finishes. We're going to see a lot more sprayed plaster and pumped render. And I think from that, so from that, it's just going to evolve. And I think some of the architects that I'm lucky enough to know, I've already seen where they want to go with it. And it is exciting. And what I want to do is if we can use some of that in the affordable market and make some affordable houses really stunning, then I'll have done my job.
Brilliant. Paul, question about the present, but also the future. So where is the construction industry not focused and should be?
On guys on a site. They're totally overlooking the guys on the site, and I know why as well. So we've overdone the digital side of it, or the digital world is done to death. You've got every program that you'll probably never ever use, but it's there on your laptop. But it's how do we and this is where I focused personally, and it's how do I make the working environment for the guys on the site safer, warmer, and better. And we talked about how do we introduce the youngsters into construction, and it's about improving the on-site experience, really, or the on-site life. Because I don't know about you, I'm 50, nearly 60, and some of my mates are no longer with us, and they should be. And it's probably because of the conditions that they sort of endured during their teenage and through their 20s and 30s, and the stuff they picked up. So it's how do we improve the on-site experience, and how do we turn on-site into production formats? And by doing so, how can we pay people better and improve their improve their life in construction? That's really where I think that we need to focus, and it's somewhere that we're certainly not concentrating on. There is pushback on-site. I mean, it's difficult for professional services to go on site and tell a bricky or a plasterer that he's got to, drop your tools. I'm going to show you a new way of doing it as of next week. They're very receptive to that. They never have been. Mm-hmm. But when you start showing them that actually, guys, we can make you work. We've got ways of you working. If you do adopt these practices, give them a chance. You might be able to earn a few more quid. You might be able to work in a better condition. And I think that's the key to this, is the site condition. So I developed the Thunder House. I don't know if you know about it. And it was a build rig, really, that protects the guys while they're working, safer conditions. But it helps them maintain the accuracies that they will have in a factory. So we take a factory production process and transfer that to on-site assembly. And it's just that format, really.
So Thunder House is like a large tent, right? That you
It can be a large tent. I hear that said all the time. Yeah, it can be a large tent. We can have a party. No, it's a build rig. It's a build rig. So what it is, okay. if you look at it as if you build any large structure, if you like the aircraft industry, they're building a fuselage, or if they're building a wing, they build it using a rig. What a rig does is it eliminates mistakes. So they're not relying on that particular engineer to be responsible for the whole build of the plane. The rig is, they're assembling the rig in a sequence. They follow that step by step, and those practices really eliminate mistakes. What the rig does is it enables, for me, it enables new entrants to build houses accurately. And that's really what I want to encourage. I want to encourage women in construction. I've got a video showing women in construction, and I think there's an opportunity for them. We treat them with respect. If we pay them decent money, I think they they make us blokes look rather silly. So that's what I want to encourage. I've seen it in the past, and it's something that I want to encourage more and more in the UK. And I think women will make phenomenal house builders.
Brilliant. Okay, Paul, the last question, creativity and change. How do you stay creative in your work?
How do I stay creative? Challenges, people will ask me. So last year I finished a fundraiser, and that for me, so we built different versions of it, and that was quite creative, and I quite enjoyed doing that. Again, I hate modeling. I hate making models, but you've got to do it. The digital stuff people don't want to look at. And I've learned that. I did a lot of webinars and I did a lot of online presentations, and people didn't want to listen to another digital program. They wanted to see it. And what I found quite quickly, I did a webinar with somebody in the Southwest, where I showed a quick video of a model production site. So it showed how this is being built using this fundraiser. In the 30-minute Q&A afterwards, I was the only one who got asked questions. Nobody else, you know, because like it was explaining more than you could get from a digital presentation. The digital world, when you give a digital presentation, you click and miss so much what's going on. When you look at a physical model, you can digest it in your own pace, and I think that's key to learning. So more modeling for me. I've been asked to do something recently, and I think is a game changer. I thought I was on the right path. I worked with some really, really clever guys, so I bounce off them a lot. I don't want to say who they are, but one guy in particular, he's an Italian. He's a genius, I have to say, and I bounce off him an awful lot. We encourage each other. We got to hold each other back because a lot of what can be done doesn't need to be done for the next 20 years. There's plenty to get on with now. I talk around the world, so I've got people like myself that are trying to transform their community into and upgrade them to modern methods and different approaches. And that's a global community that's forming. And again, it's people like myself, they've been on site, they've gone through the experiences, and they're using that experience to try and help us build better, really. And I think we can. It's just, from my point of view, is great guys. Now, how do we make that affordable? How do we make that accessible to everybody? And I think that's the secret to this.
Brilliant. So challenging yourself, brainstorming with others, really. And that's the answer to that question.
Yeah, always is.
Paul, thank you very much. Where can people find more about you and about Gurbuild?
LinkedIn, really. I do everything on LinkedIn. The reason why I do LinkedIn is because at the moment, I'm only interested in talking to developers and builders, councils, housing associations. I find too much online presence gets me an awful lot of inquiries from people that I'm not ready to deal with at the moment. So I'd rather deal with business to business. So LinkedIn, really, I do an awful lot on LinkedIn. So if you want to see what we're talking about today, please join me on LinkedIn. It's Paul Gurbuild.
Thank you very much, Paul.